A Modern Magna Carta, Alf Morris and the Chronically Sick and Disabled Persons Act.
2020 marks the 50th anniversary of the passing of a pioneering piece of social legislation called the Chronically Sick and Disabled Persons Act, or CSDPA. Following its passing in 1970, it was hailed as a Magna Carta for people with disabilities, a key milestone in the development of rights and provision of services for people with various health conditions, and a model for such legislation worldwide. This exhibition tells the story of the passing of the Act largely through extracts from the papers of Alf Morris MP, who plotted its journey through parliamentary processes and onto the statute book. Morris became the world's first Minister for the Disabled in 1974 and continued to fight for disability rights throughout his career, including the Disability Discrimination Act, which also celebrates its 25th anniversary in 2020. He was made Lord Morris of Manchester in 1997, and LSE Library is the custodian of his papers. Content warning. Please be aware that this exhibition features material which was created many years ago. Some of this material contains language and terminology which is outdated, and which visitors may find upsetting.
The Luck of the Draw.
The exhibition starts with two extracts from letters sent to Alf in November 1969, after Alf's name was drawn in first place in the annual Private Members Bill ballot. This stroke of luck gives the 20 MPs who were drawn the chance to propose and draft a piece of legislation. If the bill gets through the debates and amendments in the House of Commons, and then the Lords, it finally becomes law. In November 1969, Alf Morris won a coveted first place in the ballot. Good news travelled fast, and he received numerous requests from individuals and organisations to draft legislation that would support their causes. Suggestions came from, among others, the Consumer Council, the League Against Blood Sports, the Registered Plumbers Association, and the National Civil Liberties Council. He was also asked to support a bill for voluntary euthanasia. Alf chose instead to focus attention on people with disabilities. One of the letters which was chosen for this section of the exhibition was written by Marcus Kimball, who was the Conservative MP for Gainsborough. It was sent to Alf's House of Commons office on the 6th of November, 1969. Here is an extract. In view of the action taken by Canada, and the interest in the subject at the moment, I have been asked by the Fauna Preservation Society to see if you would be prepared to take up the bill introduced by Lord Cranbrook in the last session, granting some measure of protection to seals.
The Act. The CSDPA was a significant advance in the provision of social services for the long-term sick and disabled. The final Act included clauses which made it a duty for local authorities to actively collect information about how many people were covered by the Act within their jurisdictions and to inform them of the services they could get access to, made services available including at-home assistance, help with transportation to use services, access to recreational equipment and facilities, at-home meals, and the provision of telephones to aid with communication. Made authorities responsible for ensuring suitable housing was provided and public buildings were made accessible, including the provision of toilets. A copy of the Act can be accessed on the legislation.gov.uk website. Allies and assistance. Alf had support from a number of people in the drafting of the legislation, and some of these have been kept as part of his papers. These include a letter from fellow Labour MP Jack Ashley, asking Alf to take account of a number of proposed clauses for his bill, including the suggestion for a disability rights board to be established, something which arguably only happened when the Disability Rights Commission was launched in 1999. Jack was keenly receptive to the Act and worked closely with Alf on its creation. Ashley was himself prominent as the first fully deaf MP and worked throughout his career with campaigners and organisations to progress disability rights. Here is a reading of the extract from the letter sent by Jack Ashley to Alf on the 13th of November, 1969. There is discrimination against the disabled in many fields, and to deal with it, a board on the lines of the Race Relations Board would be helpful. 1. That a board be set up known as the Disablement Rights Board to ensure that there is equal opportunity for handicapped people, regardless of their disability, in education, training, employment, and all social amenities. Local authorities do not take into account the extra cost of disablement, and there should be a specific provision for these costs. 2. That every local authority shall be required, when assessing the means of a family suffering from disability, to take reasonable account of the additional expenses due to the disability. Contemporaries. There had been recent legislation proposed to support people with disabilities. In 1968, Conservative MP Jim Pryor had drafted a private member's bill called the Disabled People's Pensions and Miscellaneous Provisions Bill. The bill made a number of recommendations, such as the provision of a disability pension and proposals to make public buildings provide better access to people with disabilities. However, it didn't get enough votes to get past a second reading in the Commons and was shelved. Here is a reading of an extract from a document which included some of the provisions considered for the bill. The four basic requirements can be summarised as follows. 1. Reserved parking spaces for disabled drivers or severely disabled drivers both adjacent to and within an accessible approach to the building. 2. At least one acceptable entrance to the building unimpeded by steps. 3. Internal circulation both horizontal and vertical unimpeded by steps. This means in a multi-story building, the provision of lifts large enough to take wheelchairs and the avoidance of split levels so that all parts of the building used by the general public can be reached. 4. Accessible sanitary and cloakroom accommodation on at least one floor of the building. A few months after the CSDPA was passed, the Education Handicapped Children Act also made it onto the statute book. Prior to the Act passing, children with learning difficulties were considered to be ineducable and not entitled to education within the school system. The Act overturned this and, for the first time, gave local education authorities responsibility for all children's education. Contemporaries. Causes and campaigners. Often, legislative change comes after causes and campaigns have drawn attention to an injustice. The CSDPA was no different. One of the key groups from the 1960s calling for change was the Disablement Income Group, or DIG. They were founded in 1965 by two pioneering disabled women, Megan de Boisson and Berit Moore, who were angered at the lack of financial support available to people with disabilities. DIG was a pan-impairment campaign, i.e., they looked at issues affecting all people with disabilities and regardless of the specific health conditions or impairments that people had. Here is an extract from an early leaflet produced by DIG and sent to Labour politician and contemporary of ALF's Peter Shaw, which shows some of their early thinking. As things are, you might be injured or disabled by accident or disease, and you would be entitled as of right to a state income from one source or other, unless you are a housewife. A housewife and mother working full-time in her home is not eligible for any form of compensation for chronic illness or disability whatsoever, and may not even draw national assistance, no matter how sadly her health and circumstances decline or how poorly paid her husband may be. There's also material from a smaller and less well-known organisation called the National Campaign for the Young Chronic Sick, or NCYCS. The NCYCS was founded to raise awareness and combat the practice of sending younger people with disabilities and chronic illnesses to live in geriatric wards. The campaign worked, as ALF and others raised the issue during debates in Parliament, and Section 17 of the CSDPA made provisions to prevent younger patients being given accommodation within such wards. An income for all. One of the DIG's key proposals was the introduction of a national disability income, provided as a form of social security and paid to all people with disabilities based on need. DIG were keen to work with and lobby politicians to enact legislative change. They also incorporated help from academics and experts who understood the social security system. One key figure was Peter Townsend. Townsend was an academic who had come to prominence in the 1960s for his work investigating the poverty which was still impacting communities across the UK, despite the formation of the welfare state. Townsend co-founded the Child Poverty Action Group, whose papers are also at LSE Library, and later went on to help found the Disability Alliance. This survey is from an early working paper produced by DIG which used research done by Peter. It's called Survey of the Welfare Problems of Correspondents of DIG. A totally disabled housewife with a bronchitic husband who loses a lot of time off work writes, "We have to keep our youngest daughter at home. We can get no NAB, National Assistance Benefits, to keep and clothe her as she works for her father. Doctor agrees I should not be left alone. We had a home help for 2 hours daily, 5 days a week, at 25 shillings per week. We couldn't pay that." The cost of alterations to the home and incidental expenses are often incurred. Quote, "The welfare department has made what can only be described as a derisory offer of £14 towards the work. Quote, "My wear on clothes is really fantastic, yet on my income tax, I can claim nothing at all. Quote, "I have to wear a caliper, and the constant rubbing of steel soon wears my clothes to holes." Defend the 1970 Act. The CSDPA was passed at the end of a decade which had been overseen largely by Harold Wilson's Labour government. Indeed, it was one of the last pieces of Labour legislation to get royal assent, squeezing its way into law on the 29th of May 1970. 3 weeks later, there was a new Conservative administration in power. Many of the Act's provisions became the devolved responsibility of local authorities, and there were considerable differences between how much authorities provided or were able to provide. An article from 1971 in The Times called "Disparities in the New Deal for the Disabled" reported, "There appear to be great disparities in local responses to the obligations imposed by the Act." The twin elections in February and October 1974 saw the Labour Party narrowly returning to power with a slim parliamentary majority. The mid to late 1970s saw a series of economic crises which plagued the government until the end of the decade and into the next. Alongside the economic uncertainty, there were growing threats to public services and expenditure as the decade wore on and the government changed. This included many services and programs designed for people with disabilities. Here's part of a 1975 letter sent from Action Research for the Crippled Child to ALF about the potential for increasing cuts to expenditure. It was sent on the 4th of July, 1975. "There is much talk at the present time of cuts in expenditure right across the board. The purpose of this letter is to ask you to do your best to ensure that disabled people are excluded from any sweeping cuts of this nature. I fully appreciate that the country is in an extremely serious situation financially, and that it is necessary for all of us to tighten our belts. But disabled people will already be doing this along with the rest of us, and to reduce the special provisions for the disabled as well would mean that the contribution, or if you like, the sacrifice, made by a disabled person would, in fact, be made twice. Moreover, we must remember that because of his or her handicap, a disabled person is very probably at the lowest level of income and much less able than the rest of us to make any financial sacrifice at all." Minister for the Disabled. ALF held his parliamentary seat from 1964 to 1997, and even when Labour was out of power, his Withenshaw majority remained solid. In 1974, he was returned, again, to serve as MP, but in a matter of months, and as a result of his years of work on behalf of people with disabilities, he was promoted to become the world's first Minister for the Disabled. This is an extract from an article which appeared in the magazine Community Care about ALF's new role. "Today, ALF Morris is in a seat of power, with a large office and a staff 6 floors up in the London headquarters of the Department of Health and Social Security. He is occupying a post unique to Britain and rare in any country, the Minister for the Disabled. As one would expect, he maintains the enthusiasm and the drive he had as a boy and a young man who lived closely with the problems of the disabled. Mr. Morris's father was disabled until his death in the mid-1930s. When he married, his first home was with his in-laws, one of whom was also disabled. Despite the economic difficulties which beset the decade, campaigns and organisations continued to press the government to provide support schemes and social security. There was some success in the early to mid-1970s, which saw a number of new benefits being introduced. Both the mobility allowance and the non-contributory invalidity pension were announced in 1975. There was a degree of controversy over both, however. Feminist fightback. The non-contributory pension was one of the measures in the 1975 Social Security Act. It had been seen as a way of providing benefits to people with disabilities who had not worked or were unable to work and therefore could not contribute towards national insurance schemes. Originally, the payments were intended to cover men and single women, but this was overturned when the bill was still being debated and married women with disabilities were also included. However, the Act stipulated that married women had to pass an additional housewife test before they would receive any payment. This led to claims by feminists that married women with disabilities were being treated like second-class citizens. Eventually, the 1984 Severe Disablement Allowance replaced the pension and provided benefits to men and women equally. For this section, we chose a couple of pieces of protest literature which were produced by the Equal Rights for Disabled Women campaign, who disagreed with the Act as it was. Here's an extract from one of the leaflets which featured. What is wrong with the normal household duties test? 1. It is discriminatory, and it is based on outdated assumptions about the position of married women. The government's justification for the test is that a married woman is by definition a housewife whose normal job is housework. Indeed, the benefit has been named Housewives NCIP. It is typical of our social security system, which treats married women as their husband's dependents. The facts show otherwise. In the last 25 years, the proportion of married women economically active, i.e. in or seeking work, has more than doubled. It is now estimated to be just over half, and it is expected to be 55% by 1986. According to the Department of Employment, the prospect of being continuously available for employment over a period of 20 or 30 years is now the normal pattern. It is now normal for married women to work. Getting around. The mobility allowance was put in place to provide all people with disabilities with a cash payment to help them to pay for transportation in order to get around. One of the results of the new scheme was that it replaced so-called invalid trikes, or Invacars, after the company that first produced them. These were specially designed vehicles which had been in production since the end of the Second World War. The cars were available, free of charge, by the NHS to people with certain disabilities to use as a form of transport. By the mid-1970s, however, there were safety concerns about their use, and the fact that people with different kinds of disability were essentially excluded from owning one meant that the mobility allowance was proposed as an alternative scheme. Labour politician David Ennals, who was Secretary of State for Social Services, announced the ending of the scheme. Here's an extract of a letter he wrote to people affected and annoyed by the changes. The decision to stop making new tricycles was not taken lightly, and it was certainly not taken to save money, because we are in the process of trebling expenditure on mobility for the disabled. The decision had simply become unavoidable. We were concerned about the accident figures and, in particular, the risks to new drivers revealed by the figures. The tricycle cannot be made as stable as a four-wheeled car, and even although it meets all the regulations which apply to it today, it cannot meet all the design requirements for the future, requirements which will apply to new cars generally, not just to invalid tricycles. But we are ordering big enough stocks to enable us to replace tricycles as they wear out, at least until 1981, and thus to keep the fleet going for at least 5 years for those who had their tricycles issued under the old scheme. A Social Responsibility. This exhibition shows some of the changes which were brought about by governments, politicians and campaigners that impacted the lives of people with disabilities. As an MP and later minister in government, Alf had much contact with groups leading such change. A considerable portion of an MP's work is also, however, representing their constituency and providing assistance to members of the public. The final item in this exhibition is a letter which was sent to Alf just after the CSDPA had passed. Here is an extract from it. "My handicaps are slight compared with many others, so it was with joy I read of the help to be given. I hope the good work continues, and agree it is a good idea to have handicapped people on leading committees, as able-bodied people do not always realise our difficulties. The local council, Sizedon, gave me a purpose-built bungalow, but due to horizontal extensions on my chairs for my legs, even with their careful planning, it is not ideal, as low-range cupboards are beyond me, and activities have to be done sideways like washing up, as my legs won't go under a beautifully fitted sink unit. This isn't always easy when stiff. Let's hope before long all councils will have disabled representatives on their subcommittees." The letter is perhaps worth highlighting because it shows the positive difference that was made by the CSDPA and legislation like it. But it also highlights how a lack of proper representation by people with disabilities could lead to poor outcomes. The social model of disability maintains that some of the most difficult barriers for people to overcome are caused by society. Disability should not therefore be understood as a medical issue which prevents individuals from joining society, but rather how society prevents all people taking part within it. Changes advocated by Morris and other disability activists and allies continue to make the world more accessible for everyone.